I'm representing.
Thank you, DJ. I can see that you are in touch, you know, over the We meet today just a few hours after Bafana Bafana called Peter Mutimane was fired, apparently because of the string of poor performance by our international soccer team. On Sunday afternoon, Bafana Bafana, which is currently going to be four, on the FIFA ranking table drew 1-1 with Ethiopia, which is ranked 138 on the FIFA ranking table. Instead of improving, our national soccer team appears to be going down. We are hoping the African Cup of Nations next year, and at the same time, we have to fight to qualify for FIFA World Cup in Brazil in 2014. And with this kind of performance as a nation, the soccer loving nation as we are, we feel so disappointed. And the question is, what is going on with our national soccer team? What happened to the women's tournament of 1996 and 2010? So those are some of the questions which need to be asked ourselves as a nation. On the positive side, we must say that we are noticing a shift by a certain process being put in place by the Department of National Sports and Recreation to develop and transform sports education in South Africa. The sports administration in Durban held in Johannesburg last year was a huge step in the right direction. I know because I was part of this deliberation, it is pleasing to see the product of it that in Durban, particularly the National Sports and Recreation Plan, the Transformation Charter, and the Sports Plan. However, the key questions are, what are we today? How are we, are all of this program going to work? How are they going to benefit our people, and in particular, our youth program people? And this is the opportunity for the Department of Education, for the education to tell us how is this going to work and how to match resources are going to be needed. I must indicate on a lighter note, I'm not a supporter of Orlando Pirates, but I just want to say, how do we, why don't we just tell Orlando Pirates to be on that note, this is the moment to meet our
Thank you, Chair. I've noted the questions that the Chair has asked. Maybe the presentation on the strategic plan and the budget will not necessarily reflect and respond to those directly. But we have, for information purposes, prepared the separate presentation that will bring the committee into speak in terms of that the department is going to start with some of the review plan. But let me present on the strategic plan, and then we will do the budget thereafter. Honorable Chair. Our strategic plan that is required by law will allow you the financial year 2012 to 2016. As we start by the TFMA, we have to plan in 3 years cycle. But I must also happen to say that what we see in the strategic plan represents the work to be done largely in 2012, the financial year in the main, and with such an idea of what will happen in the two other, the middle and the outer year. The other issue of importance is that the short plan, though, Madam Chair, is a 20-year plan. It's not a short-term plan. We have taken that view and vision 2022 based on the understanding that all other short-term interventions we have put in place in the past have really been resource-intensive and consuming, and have not really yielded the result. One of the biggest challenges facing South African sports today remains the issue of access. This is one of the greatest impediments to our performance as a country. Access is one of the greatest challenges, even greater than the issue of resources. And it is therefore important that we look that re-engineering the South African sport landscape and the South African sport system to highlight the weaknesses and begin to address those that are identified as the sport plan. So the presentation on the strategic plan will look at some of those key elements. Let me indicate that this sports plan, this presentation will not necessarily cover the targets that outlined in the annual performance plan, but we broadly look at the framework of the key issues of strategy and the key issues we as a department will be focusing on in respect of elements of the sports plan and putting them into place. The most difficult challenge with this work, as we have seen at our strategic retreat in Matalis, was the key issue of prioritization. What to do first? And also, the issue is, of what needs to be done, I think, is the more easy part. But what we shouldn't be doing, it is the most difficult thing. And particularly because the system had already been entrenched and had allowed certain practices to occur in the past. And to change that into a new way of doing things, it's taking a lot of courage and it's taking a toll on the participating. Our strategic plan has the following programs, one in administration, and our key focus there really has been on the issue of strengthening our own administration. Key to this work is our structuring process, which we have undertaken after the sporting lab. The department is now required to take on new mandates and also to give up some of the other things it used to do before. And some functions have to be transferred to SASCOP, which the department was responsible for previously. And some which SASCOP was also overlooking what we do. We have now identified those, and we now need to be differently structured to accommodate this. And some of the new programs we have initiated, including the whole idea of an athlete pathway strategy, requires us to be structured differently and requires us to have significant capacity to be able to carry out the talent administration program and talent support as well as development. In program two, we look at sports support services. This area in the past has been done well, but on a small scale. So this includes also an area of federation support and also clubs. We are now, as we speak, in the process of re-engineering the entire club system for the country. And we are looking at a modified franchise system for clubs to be developed. Frankly speaking, an admission has to be made that after all the years of democracy and millions of friends who have invested into local clubs, we've got nothing to show for those in there. None of the clubs have really progressed from disorganized community. Clubs into much more formalized clubs than who have progressed. And we haven't seen any of the clubs emerging straight into the higher ranks and getting promotions through their athletes. And so not a single club can be claimed at this stage that as a direct result of our contribution. Yes, there is a sprinkle of players who have emerged because of those clubs, but the clubs themselves, particularly township clubs, which is our focus and community clubs, have not really progressed, and that is why we are engineering the entire club system for the country and presenting it differently as directed by the club. We're also looking at a new way of supporting federations. This requires huge capacity that we currently do not have, and hence the need for structuring and looking at re-engineering processes in sports support services. Then mass participation, which is our flagship program to improve access, which has already indicated that is a key challenge, remains our cornerstone and our key focus for this current financial year going forward. In it, our flagship program is the school sports program. We have indeed reduced some funding from the Siadala program and redirected it to school sports, largely because Siadala had not necessarily focused on talent identification as well as improving competitiveness, but Siadala encouraged more of the recreational participation of the athletes within the sport district. And then we have actually focused this much more succinctly at the issue of greater participation at the school level. Then we have an international relations program. Again, this is a program where in the past has been largely reactive. We had awaited for the bi-national commissions to take place, and we have allowed for processes where at a higher level, sometimes in the presidency and so on, where agreement sites for the recreation or exchanges in art culture and so on, and we have had to follow those national agreements in this regard. This year we are starting with an ambitious program of a shopping list on a progressive basis and much more on a proactive basis. We now know the needs of the country and what the country does not have. We do not have a good history of developmental coaches. We have very good high performance coaches, which are also important. But the development work is quite not so popular in our country and not so good. And we have not had it before in the last 20 years or so of great developmental coaches. And we will be shooting for this in countries which have a rich tradition of this. Cuba comes to mind as an example. And countries such as China now, in the past 10 years, they have introduced this. We are obviously looking at partners within the South African Foreign Policy and those who work within multilateral institutions in this regard. So our program this year will be heightened to obtain the type of technical support. For instance, one of the breakthroughs we have already achieved in the first quarter of this financial year was an agreement with the British partner to provide us with funding for purposes of systems development as well as for purposes of coach training. Then five our key pillars as well. We are beginning work around the facilities coordination. We are just in the past week held the municipal conference on sport and recreation, which in major focus was around the issue of facilities and the coordination there. It is important to highlight this because, as you are aware, right now the portfolio committee on sport and recreation is doing district provinces looking and assessing the state of the legacy projects for the World Cup. And also assessing the state of facilities in the country, their utilization and the policies surrounding it. As you are aware, the demarcations in terms of the constitution really hamper our ability as a national government to do much in this respect. Provinces and largely municipalities own the bulk of the facilities of our country. And even the so-called national sport precinct, the Department of Sport and Recreation has very little say over the policies that govern this and how they run. Largely, many of them are either owned by provincial governments or the large metros. And this is a key concern for us. And added to this has been the idea of rural sport infrastructure, particularly in the areas where they are needed the most. Rural areas and small municipalities that are marginalized come into mind in this respect. And we have not been able to make much impact since 1994. In rolling out quality, high-end infrastructure, except during the 2010 World Cup. But other than that, most of the facilities we have been rolling out are largely municipal-based facilities, the Tier 1, in terms of our new building system now. And we have since recognized the need for creation of bigger regional sport hubs in all the districts of the country demarcated by the municipal demarcation board. So it is important that this work be understood and be located within the sports plan. There's many other areas that the sports plan requires to perform work on, but we will not, with the current available resources and members, be able to do all of them in their work. And so the idea of prioritization and scaling them in has therefore become the cornerstone of our focus in terms of our planning. In this regard, I've spoken about the structuring that we have begun, and we have also done a stratified strategic role as well as current management control, and we are looking at the mitigating strategies of reducing the risk of failure introduce new things that have not been tested before and that have not been done. And the political leadership requires that we enter and enter bold, not from kind of point of view and so on, but the rollout must be on a massive scale. There's always a high risk of unintended consequences and unanticipated challenges, and therefore we have tried to look at all the areas, including on the control efficiency of the department. Let me say, Chair, part A of the strategic plan looks at the strategic overview. This looks at all the issues including the situational analysis, largely the summary that I have given in terms of the kind of challenges we are facing. And part B looks at strategic objectives around the 5 program. What is it that we want to see as outcomes and how we want those achieved? And this, we are succinctly trying to link them to outcomes as a government, which requires an empowered system and much more information in democracy. And we as our minister is a signature with the president on that outcome. We have recently managed to edit our department focus to be, after the adoption of the short plan by cabinet, to be upgraded to the level of an FAP objective in the entire case. So as we look at other plans, we look at the work that our two entities are doing, and we also look at the conditional grants that we give to provinces. Provinces take the bulk of our budget. 60% of our budget goes to provinces. The other 25% goes to federation, and we as a department remain with 25%. So to do all the other programs, we have to drive and to also run administration. So those amounts become quite meager if we then have to compare with what we are expected to do. And hence we have begun the process of costing the national sports plan. Cabinet is considering the approval, obviously, with the advice of the Treasurer, of an additional almost $1 billion for year one, which is the $20 billion financial year, or €980 million or so, to start the rollout process, largely in school sport. And we are also costing it over the next 5 years to look at the incremental basis on which we can go. The truth of the matter is that our baseline is quicker. As we stand, it doesn't look quite good for what we are supposed to do and what the country expects of the sports plan to happen. So we are still within the old baseline as we speak, and we will hope that after the 11 costings and the three, we will be in a situation where we are able now to do that. We have, for the first time, Madam Chair, revised the conditional grant framework. Largely because in the past, provinces did largely as they determined it in respect of the grant. There were three main divisions on the grant, and in those three main divisions, we then allowed the greater latitude for provinces to exercise greater creativity in terms of how they use the grant. But the end result was not very clear, because largely we ended with a situation where there was no uniformity in terms of prioritization of programs. And you found that provinces went for the easier or the low-hanging fruits only. So they will have like short-term tournaments, which maybe will engage about 200 or so schools in a province, pay for such a tournament, maybe over the holidays. And even in the club system, they will give the support in terms of equipment and apparel and all those things to clubs, and they would do that thing twice a year, and that would be the end of FIFA. The substantive support that needed to be done to clubs was not all about. So we spent a whole period of time re-engineering the conditional grant, because we understood that the bulk of our resources go to this, and if 50% of our resources go to this, we have to pay specific attention, particularly because year in, year out, the Auditor General's report serious challenges in terms of accountability for the conditional grant, and most of the time we even bother from being qualified because of material misrepresentations that emanated and the material lack of control that emanated from the grant. So we have tightened the conditional grant framework. We have now petitioned in such a manner that it gives greater guidance in terms of what provinces have to achieve. Obviously, there were provinces that were in favor of the new system, and there were those that were grossly unhappy with the new framework. But consequently, seven provinces signed up for a new framework, and two were resisted, Kaupin and Frisbee, were resisting to sign the new framework. But the Minmec sat and discussed this issue in detail, and many of the two provinces were still adamant that they would not sign. And the National Treasury, as it had already published this and has diverted it, has indicated that if those two provinces do not sign by the cut-off date of the money, they will forfeit the money for the rest of the financial year. And so, consequently, they signed up. And also, ultimately, how they were 30 years, the day before the cutoff, submitted the financial plan. So those two provinces have not received as yet their quarter one transfer, so to say, because the fact that they did not sign, and the National Treasury would never have allowed us to transfer money to them if they had not signed. So this has created a serious challenge. Because now they are going to have to double their efforts to spend the money. And in the past, it has shown that, well, except housing, I think the Free State is going to have a huge challenge in terms of keeping up in spending the money. So I think we're going to have a challenge in that area. So we have decided not to lament this, but to support the problem. We will deploy staff to those two provinces to help them, particularly in the major sections, Kuspok, make sure that they should have and they're able to spend their grants and they spend it faster to make up for lost time that is there. Added to this is the process we are engaged in re-engineering the framework around funding of federation. This is very important because federations also take up 25% of our budget and they are responsible for transformation. Many of them are affiliated to international bodies which do not require us to interfere. And there is a thin line between intervention and interference. Because when these federations require something important out of us, they are glad to invite us to come in and to support them and to do that. And at that point, that intervention is not considered interference. It's only, we're only considered to be interfering if they are doing something wrong, and we are saying correct this thing, then they are doing interference. But there's a thin line. I think all over the world, governments are finding it difficult to deal with federations and how they interact. But in the U.S., for instance, all the federations have to abide by the law of the U.S., and the U.S. government doesn't allow unfair practices and all those things that are considered cartel-like practices. Which in South Africa, some federations practice the same thing, but yet the US federations are not suspended. So it is for that reason that we have decided to amend the South African Sports Plan. Sports Act, sorry, to give greater emphasis on the ministerial power. To intervene, because we believe that these international federations have to respect the law of the land. Right now, the law is not very clear, and when we were doing the inquest and the commission on cricket, we realized quickly that there were gaps in terms of the law, and we want to strengthen that way. So we are now at the stage where we are almost about to publish the new grant framework for federations. In the past, federations, we give them money, we requested them to submit business plans on what they intended to do. And and they submitted the business plans, and we then determine which of the programs in the business plans we will finance, and we will then allocate the available contractors and according to what each federation of training will do. But our key emphasis has always been that we will finance the federation, particularly the development aspect of their work, not in Africa. For instance, we would not give money to our Samaritan partner or to the Springbok and so on, the Frontier, because largely they've got significant sponsorship behind that and so on. So we would rather focus on the other teams. For instance, Papa, we have been looking at the junior teams, the Shimanyana, Amandam Bazana, Matthew Group and so on, and we also focused on the Namalanyana and the development aspect of the game. And when it's with the high performance, we are not focused on that. The federations know that they will get money anyway, you know, sort of. And so we will lament, we will give them money and lament that they are refusing to transform and refusing that they remain untransformed and so on, but yet we give them money. So we have decided to use the only leverage we have in the absence of a strong law, that we should encourage for positive correction, trying to encourage them to do the right thing and linking a reward system to that. And that's what the new grant framework seeks to do to that. We have divided funding for federations into two parts, part A being the guaranteed tier, so that we don't have unintended consequences by allowing particularly the smaller federations who are totally dependent on the territory for their survival to collapse. So we will continue granting them a guaranteed tier, which is enough for them to run their administration. Now the second tier is the conditional tier. And the conditions we are attaching to this, among them, include the key issue of transformation and access, promoting access and making sure, because I can share with you that in a survey of about 15 federations, we quickly came to realize that some federations are using the class system of the country to block transformation and access. A federation would say that for a class to one, it needs to pay a membership fee of 100,000 to the federation. And that will allow them also to participate in the championships and so on. They need 3 years of each have financial treatment. They need constitutions and all sorts of things. Many of the township clubs in reality do not have any of this, and they would never be in a position to do that. And so we are in a budget with letters of clubs who have been supporting this regard. And we have decided in this regard that we needed to remove that outfit like that. So netball is a shining example of what can be achieved when we liberalize the club system. And with netball, after their brink of collapse earlier, they have decided to liberalize their affiliation. They opened it up and said, if you are a club, you are organized, you can follow this format of writing a constitution. And if you have 20 members or more, you are free to join the federation, and we don't need to pay any membership. This has had a huge negative impact on them because they are not collecting any revenue. But it has had huge positive impact on the sporting side, because even the team that's leaving for Jamaica on Sunday is one of the highly representative teams of our country at the national level. And they say that in their league system, they prioritize quota. But at national level, they prioritize merit. But you can see when you liberalize access and you open up opportunities for people to freely participate, that the issue of quotas doesn't become an issue anymore. Merit will determine how well people emerge and how they become. So this is what our new framework seeks to achieve, to reward federations such as myself with more money to do the right thing. For federations, for more townships and historically marginalized clubs they can bring into their fold and affiliates, we will reward them more with the conditional tier of the funding. The more they win medals and they are better ranked in the world, we will reward that good performance with more resources. If they do win tournaments, we will get more. If they fill the competitive teams, not just based on culture, but also on good performance, we will do so, because let's face it, Federation Touch of Cricket, with all the resources they have and all the money they have, they are on average producing one or two black protea people. That can be right by any standard. And you can see something from artificial glass being blocking people from crossing back to you. So we will seek to use this. Obviously, this must be complemented with a stronger law because some federations are too big to even bother. In fact, our contribution of what we give them will only make 2% of their budget. So, in fact, this is just going to be an extra impact and a hassle to them. And then with those federations, we have to use positive coercion again by putting a lot of political pressure on them to do the right thing. But in addition to this, in the past, we gave political premium too cheaply and too easily. They need us to host international tournaments. They need us to get sponsorship endorsements. They need us for various other things. And in the past, we freely gave those things. We will no longer give them that easy. Federations that want to host the World Cup, they will have to show us cost in terms of the other deliverables. Why is it important that the country should invest millions in them when they are not transforming and they are not doing the right thing? And I think such a linkage becomes quite key and important in terms of driving the transformation agenda. In addition to this, the minister has now appointed them a panel of eminent persons on transformation of sport. And this panel will be having its first meeting this Friday here in Cape Town. The intention really is to look at the scorecards as adopted by the Indaba and the Transformation Charter, which are now part of the scorecards. Each federation has to be given its own milestone. And then this eminent panel of the independent people will then evaluate the federation so that government is not accused of meddling and interfering. But in addition to this, we need stronger laws, like I said, to complement all the efforts we have made. One of the greatest power the minister has before his disposal right now is the power to deregister a federation. We have up to this time, 18 years later, never exercised that power at all. And we will have to revisit this if the eminent panel of people responsible for monitoring transformation indicates to us that there is general reaction by federations. Some of these powers will not start in obviously, there will be a lot of backlash, there will be a lot of media saying that we are cheating sports. How can South Africa not play rugby or cricket or whatever it is, karate, you know, whatever the case might be. But if the right thing is not doing that, this clock is kind of remaining and they are not being utilized. We have to exercise them. So, Chair, I'm not going to bore you with all this, the mission and vision. They have not changed, they remain the same. Let me now indicate that these are our goals for the next 3 years in terms of achieving that area. To improve access, as I said, transformation of sports, to support our athletes to achieve international success. And to have an integrated system of media and also use part of the tools for achieving government policies, including issues surrounding the environment, including crime, drug abuse, ethics, and healthy lifestyle, as well as creating a much more efficient and effective sport and recreation for Africa, a well-held machinery to do that as possible. Okay, right now, Chair, we have decided to start the National Sports Volunteer Corps. This has been launched in February. We will soon be entering the registration phase of all of these people. They will have to undergo, we are planning that they will undergo the training in the first hoc level one coaching in the different corps. And this, we are hopeful that by September this year, we'll start seeing the first graduates of the program. Former sports staff and former players, former coaches and so on, being deployed to the current database of the volunteers who's in the 2021 to use this one again for the upcoming 2013 games in January. And we have begun working with regard to the volunteer training or refresher framework has already been finalized with the LOC. Chair, we also, as you may be aware, we have recently been awarded by SAIS to be awarded the best sport tourist destination in the world. And this actually signifies the true work that we have done. This actually, Chair, indicates the key work that we are doing in this regard. And the other key thing to me is the issue of looking at the federations and the structures and the boundaries that the sports can require us to demarcate quite well. We have begun this work with the first call and with the federation in clarifying what should be done and the role of all the stakeholders in the sport, including the role of the provincial sports council, the local sports council, and so on. And in terms of the new DORA framework, we are now in the position to start financing through provinces directly the sports councils, which we have seen that they were supported only in two provinces previously. Now we have brought in uniformity of ensuring that all provinces are obligated to support the work of the sports council. Chair, I've spoken again about the issue of club development and support, which we are totally ignoring right now. And we believe that the first semblance of the implementation of this plan will come in the second half of the financial year, when we have thrashed out everything in the federation who are expected to register this club and to affiliate them. We're also looking at a new program around the recreation. And this will help us unlock. We are looking at the different aspects, both on nationally driven programs as well as the bulk of them being the locally driven programs. The Municipal Conference on Sport and Recreation discussed this matter in detail, and there were key resolutions that were taken in this respect. One of the major key resolutions is on our community gyms program. We're looking at creating open air gyms right across the communities, and we're looking at municipalities in making sure that where there are all public open spaces and where there are kids parks and all that, that we also provide facilities for open gyms, because the indoor community gyms that we have been rolling out and providing has not really worked quite well, owing to the fact that when you have such a gym, you require a lot of infrastructure in place, which the counties are not allowed to, or which we can afford at this stage. But a module was piloted in Johannesburg, in Soweto, the first open gym. This module has been working quite well in countries like Brazil, in China, in the Philippines. You have similar type of facilities, and they have worked quite well. People can simply walk to this place and jog and do everything to that. And that improves the quality of life and the type of life. And that's the type of uniformity at the local level we would like to see happening. And we have for the first time provided funding towards the recreation part of our program. We'll also be observing all the national dates in this respect. We have started this year with the Move for Your Health Day. United Nations Day, supported by the World Health Organization. And we ran it here in Cape Town in Langa, where in excess of 2,000 school children, youth, the elderly, and so on participated actively on the aerobics and aerobics marathon from early in the morning till late in the early evening. And it is this type of program that we are encouraging to happen. Added to this, it's our new normal program with vigil access, but vigil will have to have open days and so on for poor people. And we are also looking at the second tier community gyms, where they will be training people in communities to run, and they are looking at donating their second-hand equipment into this community gym and as a new business to create the second tier of affordable gyms for our community. We will also continue our tasks, particularly in the larger areas and in the metros with our gym program we have been doing so, and the gym keep us also able to donate the bulk of its equipment to us for this purpose. So let me also move to indicate that we have done a lot of work around the school sport program, and school sport remains the bedrock of our master education and celebrity education program. Like I have indicated that the challenge with about is the issue of access. We believe that because it's compulsory for every child to go to school, schools are a good place on which we must allow children to be able to participate quite effectively. Members would be aware here that for quite a long time, schools have not really been playing active, but the independent schools and modesty schools have been playing quite well. Mm-hmm. We're looking at scaling up this program to all the 27,000 public schools to make sure that all are ultimately participating. Right now, on our database, we have in excess of 10,000 schools that have registered for the school sport league. This league is not a dance-off. It's going to be a permanent feature of our school sports program in the chosen 16 codes. And in those 16 codes for year one, we have prioritized the further five, the so-called the big five. It is netball, cricket, rugby, football, and athletics. So this is our key preoccupation for year one. The scheduling by the different federations has already occurred. This work will culminate, we have started with a magnificent Wednesday now, where every Wednesday after school, this register schools are encouraged to do so. We have agreed with the sportcast that we will transfer their first grant of the 3 million, which they will use to support the first and third world schools, which are very poor and cannot afford such as equipment as well as facilities. And to this extent, these schools will now, the process at the provincial level has begun in identifying them one by one, and the rollout program will the first start to begin. We have applied to the lottery, national lottery, for the distribution of funds to the sports chamber for some amount of 324 million spent. Spend, but the lottery indicates that they all in all for sports for this financial year have 368 million. And if they give us the entire 324 for school sports, they must actually do shop. So it looks like we will settle around the amount of close to 200 million to finance the school sports program in the result, particularly in year one, while the cabinet and us and treasury are finalizing the costings around it. The costings for year one have almost been completed, and we are now doing for year two until year five, we are doing the testing for the first time here. To this extent, DBD has now directed the schools for the policy. The inputs to this policy and the responses were allowed until 31st March, and since then there has been an assessment of the few inputs that came in, and most of them have been incorporated. The Minister of Basic Education will now gazette the final school sport policy. The only weakness, we would have preferred to have two things in terms of this policy. First, to make sport compulsory for schools. Right now, it is an opt-in situation. Parents have to give permission for children to play. Whereas in the past, it was compulsory for children to play, and if a child couldn't play either for health reasons or for one reason or the other, only then the parent would indicate otherwise, supported by a medical certificate. But now the Children's Act has unintended consequence. When our children in school can't be compelled to play, and so the governing bodies must actually pass a special resolution. So in some of the dysfunctional schools, which largely are our target base, governing bodies are not as effective as they are supposed to be. And also the other key challenge in this aspect is that the power in terms of the schools, South African Schools Act, lies with the governing bodies to determine which sporting codes are played at school. So the minister, you know, the MEC's sovereign do not have the power to determine that issue. So as a consequence, most governing bodies simply choose and say this is a right school, and they will not open up to other codes and so on, which creates another unintended consequence that they are not keeping the transformation agenda of what we want to achieve. So the law in this regard will have to be transformed. But the other thing that also expected to see in terms of this was the whole issue of funding of those vibrant education, which is not really there. The other key related aspect in which we seek to address via legislation is the issue of doping in schools, particularly historically modesty and white schools. This is a serious challenge. It is not so much of a challenge in township schools and so on. And our South African Institute of Drug Research, a very small public entity, is being kept busy right through the with litigation by rich parents who when the governing body has opted in into the issue of testing, and they have been found to be voting, the apparent side left, right, and center, and that entity doesn't have time for, and the resources to be fighting lawyers. So we will also be through Parliament be bringing legislation this year to amend the Act of the Institute to improve the rights to test in schools. So those schools and parents who sign the form allowing their children to participate in sports, the form must include the clause that parents are giving consent to hand on testing. So we will not have all the money to test in this, but like the Admiral of the SA Navy when he was asked whether the South African lead submarines when we are at peace with all our neighbors and things like that. Used an analogy that if you were to cross a river and you knew that there were no crocodiles, you would cross that river. If you know there are crocodiles in the river, even if you don't see them, you think twice before crossing. So in the same manner, those children will know that they may be tested in time, and they don't know when they may be tested. And it will be a good challenge to some extent before they will touch it. So we are also in the process of empowering educators. Like I said, we are looking at training educators this year. We have just recently signed an agreement with the first teacher. A third tranche of 5 million will be released next week to start training teachers in the transport coaching framework. We are to this extent trying to get as many teachers as possible in the course-specific training to allow them to be able to coach the learners there. Right now, teachers do it out of passion, but they do not have any specific coaching tool in the children's course. They do it for the love of the sport. We now want to empower them quite well in this regard to do this. But of importance is also to train these teachers also in technical efficiency, in team management, as well as in sport administration. And this is part of the entire coaching program which the minister launched with us in November last year. So the 15 codes will start with them in their training. We have also taken a bold step consistent with our belief in introducing legal training using sports for the government of Turkey. The minister has directed that we incorporate the indigenous games into the school sports league system. And so ultimately we are looking at taking this game on a higher pedestal. We are repositioning also the annual indigenous games festival to be a family festival and to make it deep. In fact, next year, the 2013 edition in September, we'll see the winners getting prize money for the first time. And we will also try to grow the games, and we are trying to register the federations, Indicator, Ndonga, and so on, and to have formal teams and formal structures to run these games, to bring them to the level where the traditional games in Australia, in the US, and everywhere else. And the winning teams this year, NCLEXAC Coach, are being sent to Lithuania in a week's time. We are being sent to Lithuania to go to them for that because of the well traditional games festival. And I think we have taken these things quite seriously as part of the work that we're doing, and we will be supporting them in
this
regard. Thanks. We will be heading for the first time the school sport Olympics in December this year, which will be the culmination of the school sport league system. And we are looking now. We have originally planned for every event as done at the town of the Olympics, but we are now rethinking that and looking at the using a university in something for this purpose. We'll be in the first or second week of December, depending on availability of okay, the frustration here. We will then move to the issue of the mass participation program as a key contributor to job creation. Each year we submit a report to cabinet and to parliament in respect of the extent to which sports create jobs. Right now, we have not been doing quite well as a sector. We are in the downstream, in the when sport is used as a tool for tourism, we also contribute to jobs in that space. But in the direct sphere of sport participation, sport administration, coaching, all that, we have not been doing as much as we should be able to do. But with the new sports plan and its implementation, it will unlock a number of areas to contribute even greater to the sector. In other countries like the US and so on, sport is a big business, and you see their federations and to what extent they are able to churn money, and their contribution to the GDP of the country is quite significant. And we can be able to achieve the same thing, because if we look at the spend we have in sport right now, both public as well as private, it could be significant. We are looking at provinces that are allowing them to use 6% of their conditional grant to increase their employment. We have directed a different approach, and this has key issues particularly for provinces. In this regard, we have requested Treasury to allow us to use 8% to drive the sports rollout program in line with the sports plan, but Treasury refused and started the money to. With the grant framework requiring provinces now to give the sports practitioners substantive jobs and qualitative jobs on a sustainable basis. Because what has been happening is that the sports practitioners at the local level have been paid stipends, sometimes of 2,500 a month, some of them 1,500 if they are coordinators. So the money is really needed, and if you are expecting them to do a significant work and be accountable, we have not been making impact in this regard. So we have said to them that they must reduce the number of positions and hire fewer people but much more on a long term basis, at least at level 2 of the government skills, and that these people have certainty and have this. So a few provinces have had to terminate the year-to-year contract, but they have been having a few practitioners on the ground. Largely Northwest, KwaZulu-Natal, and Limpopo being the highly affected province. So, and you also know the cases in Northwest of people who have taken us to court and so on, and all that. So, we are trying to resolve some of those issues, but we have to have qualitative and substantive jobs to make impact. If we do not go this route, we will not be able to make impact as we have seen that last year. So we have also returned 15% of the NIG grant for the purposes of the Municipal Conference on Sport and Recreation took a decision that we must make representations to present for all the 15% to be centralized into one pool, and that the Department of Sport and Recreation nationally drive the rollout for sports facilities, because it was seen that in smaller marginal municipalities, their 15% is really significant to do anything. And this then becomes a vicious cycle that produces the other legacy of the past. Let me move now to the organizational environment. We have a total of about 210 folks, and we have a further about 18 or so of additional to the establishment. And we have 210 folks that are currently funded. And we have about 30 vacancies, which we will be filling in about 2 weeks' time. We have been postponing the recruitment based on our needs for restructuring, but we have decided to prioritize some positions within that to fill up the immediate results. And again, Chair, we are looking at ending the last phase of the restructuring by the end of July. I've spoken about this deliverables and programs, so I'll move straight to the budget if the chair is.
Yes.
So in terms of our budget for 2015 financial year, really the budget is aligned to all the objectives I've been speaking about, and I think we'll see the translation of this coming out as we speak. Because currently the funding must follow the structure. And you will see that our budget has declined rapidly between 2008 and 2009, from 4.9 million to 822.9 million. This largely accounts for the end of the World Cup era, and where we are given a lot of money transferred to EBSA for the stadium in the process. So with that program being fully ended, our budget has now shrunk to about 820 million. Of this, 848.4 is our projected increase in expenditure, which will increase to 967.6 million. At an average rate of about 5.6%. This is above the inflation rate, the current inflation rate. Let's look at some of the key departmental prioritization in this regard. We have received additional allocation over the interest period of 1.9 million, 4.3 and 5.5 for improved conditions of service. This may also increase further depending on how ultimately the unions finalize the budget. But our key concern remains that the baselines of both Boxing South Africa and the South African Institute of have still remained unchanged despite our motivation for this. And Chair, you may be aware that we have been annually saving BSA and having to bring them out, and the report of the intervention was not very good about what they look like. And as a going concern, we are addressing those issues right now, and we've put up an elaborate plan to help them a lot. The other key issue is that Cabinet has approved the budget cap, and 20 million cap was made for conditional grants in the NCHEP. We were told that because of the economic downturn, all conditional grants were cut, so including ours. So in the current financial year, 5.8 million would be reduced from that budget that we have already informed provinces and communication that that's going to be done. The grant that suffers the most is the mass participation program grant, which has suffered a reduction of 15.1 million in this regard over the impact year. We are looking, however, at making up for this in the creative way of linking up programs and communicating most of the projects and reprioritizing at the provincial level rather than In terms of the main allocations, this is how we have done it. We consistent with our interest, we have reduced our administration budget, and we have over the interest. As you will see, we are now consistent with the growth of the department. If that growth is considered cumulatively over the interest, you will see that the increase is quite significant. It actually almost remains the same. The only change being that the structure is growing. In this regard, so it's going to the national sports support services have a huge jump, as you can see, to 187 in the first year, the current financial year. And that 187 million represents the new expansion in supporting clubs as well as in federation support. The mass participation grant you see doesn't grow that much, consistent with the indication I made earlier, that we have decided to take some money on Master Fianala and the subsidized school spot. And then on the international liaison and events, we have chosen to become much more focused. You see that in the last financial year, we had allocated 40 million towards this program. This year, we are spending only 13 million towards this program, indicating a huge reduction and a huge reprioritization of our work and a much more focused approach to international liaison and events. In terms of facilities, we remain almost 30 with the view that we are looking over the entire period at the possibility of the centralization of the MIG grant and outdriving the process of research and again, if you look at it by economic classification, compensation is kept in check at 91 million, and goods and services grow slightly at 1.8. And the growth, there's not been any growth, in fact, the reduction to the public entities that we are funding. And the non profit institutions, that includes federations, consistent with the growth in federation support and jobs. That is a significant growth this financial year. And there's been a huge reduction in the capital goods. So you will see that over the entire MCHEP, we are not growing. In fact, we are reducing our capital expenditure. We look at recapitalizing our furniture and all those capital goods by year four. So I think when we do next year's one, we'll start seeing a little growth there, because we have changed some of our asset management policies to now do depreciation on a straight line over a 4-year period. That allows us a greater to redirect money to new areas. So this indicates the growth in our budget. You see the significant decline we have spoken about, the 25% decline. And if you look at it from a time point of view, that is implemented in good percentages. We are only taking 1% and 2% on the international market. And you see that the significant chunk, 62%, goes to our key priorities, being school sports, federations, as well as clubs. And sports support services are 22% and 13% for administration. When we came on board, we promised that consistent with best practice organizations of our nation. That's largely grant funding and so on. They spend between only 12 to 18% of their budget on administration. And so it was important for us to keep the administration in check. And that is why both compensation and administration will constitute only 13% of what we do. And that's another representation in terms of the financial provinces. We are showing how much we are spending on the IT provinces to spend on in this regard. And if you look at the economic classification by provinces, it is in the same. And the capital goods and the public entities by provinces and so on. We've got many of them at provincial academies and all those type of things that are the sector. And that is the NTT grant by province, which indicates what we had wanted to achieve. So we had wanted to do a Robin Hood type of approach, take from the rich and subsidize the poor, including Northern Cape. I think when we do the the budget adjustment in September. We will then do together with both Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal have already agreed on a 1% cut on them for redirection to Northern Cape in the main. So to support the Northern Cape because it's significant geographical school sports there is a big challenge. Schools are far apart from each other, and for them to play a league with an erratic transport system is a very costly exercise. So we have decided to cut from those who have more and to give to the ones who have less. By 1% only, 1%. And that's about our presentation on both the structure and the budget.
Thank you, DC. I think I saw on the father that I was
expecting
to see that big smile on your face because it's always exciting to see all the Western case. Minister, can I just speak to you? To the question of just to see if there's anything that was said before I allow Commissioner to speak.
Well, thank you very much, Chair. there is nothing much that I want to say except to say that we are very much on track. You will know that in the past we didn't have a DG for quite a while. And now we've got a DG and we're getting most of the things on track. And secondly, we're trying to shape up with regards to the National Sports Plan because we are trying to fall over and we have a vision and a strategy. The first plan enables us to basically have a clear direction of where we want to go in the next 50, 10, and 20 years to come. In a whole range of issues, which are interrelated, facilities, and so on. And the consequential arising from the first plan, where it's been cost us. That's what we are basically on top of in terms of implementation, school sports program, and all of that. So there's going to be a lot of adjustments when it comes to sports and sports education projects going into the future. And the central theme of our work has been working on building a case for sports because with all the competing priorities, sports has generally been in the pressure down there in terms of implementation. Yet we are the biggest contributor in relation to social cohesion and nation-based programs within the country. And part of that particular work begins at the rudimentary level with the implementation of school sports as the bedrock of development. And we're introduced to what the DG has spoken about now for the first time, the National School Sports Olympics, which is big and huge. But at the beginning and at the entry level, we've got not more than 5 sporting codes that we've actually started to roll out this year. The ultimate objective is to get to over 14 or so in relation to implementation. So I just don't want to repeat, but to say that I think that we are very much on course in terms of implementation of our. I don't know whether I'm annoying people or what, but I've seen the numbers, overall numbers, I think you will be uncertain. But just to say that. That's where we are, and in our case for sport in relation to what we want to achieve going into the future, I think, Chairperson, I'm quite confident that we're very much on track. We have gone to cabinet, cabinet has adopted the national plan, and enthusiastically, and now it's in the process of being costed. Something that has not actually been done. So our intervention is quite meaningful. The question of the lottery and its contribution, we think that there's been a general contribution without aligning to the strategic objective of sports in South Africa. Of course, assisting non-governmental organizations is part and parcel of the priority of the lottery fund and all of that. But if you've got a lot of funds, that does not speak to the priorities of what the country will achieve. It's something else. You can contribute and be all over. Next 10 years to come, you still talk about talent identification and development. Two things I want to round up with is that we have adopted an approach with regard to transformation of establishing a group of eminent persons. Because in the sports endeavor, we talked about the sports charter, and we also spoke about the scorecard. But all of those things will end up in vain if there are no guidelines, there is no follow-up, there is no audit, and federations are not bound to implementing the transformation. Part of the things that the transformation committee must look at is the legislative because you can change ministers and change federation leadership, but what must remain is that what is the legislation blueprint that guides our office when it comes to transformation, so that federations and everybody else are actually bound, including by laws, about the transformation of sport in our country. We've got the eminent group of persons. We have interacted with SASCOC and briefed them about the terms of reference of the transformation committee. We have also established a committee on recreation because we have been very not strong on recreation. And it's one of the key aspects of sports and recreation ministry. So this group also will advise us with regard to what program we need to roll out when it comes to. Part of the things that we've begun to conceptualize, which are in the pipeline, are things that relate to the whole concept of nation building through camps, not for indoctrination, but at the same time, to shape up young people at an elementary age, to understand their commitment to this country. But at the same time, through camps, to basically begin to conscientize them about patriotism and all of those particular things. Of course, that in that we'll have to partner with other government departments and so on. It is the question of the flag, you know. And what does that mean? Without indoctrinating people to sing the national anthem, but the respect of the national anthem, where we come from around that. But at the same time, these camps will also be about cross-cultural interaction and building bridges of dialogue at an early age among young people. Because once you are conscious about your other half of South Africa, which is poor, and the other half which is opulent, you interact through a camp and you go back to schools, you will then understand that this is what okay, because our kids, when schools are closed, there's nothing that they do. They just idle. That's why they say idle minds create evil ideas. They drink and they drown themselves in alcohol and drug abuse because there is no activity. And the envisage approach of this recreation is that it must engulf the nation and the youth into some form of activity. You know, the apartheid regime, I like to refer to this, they use the concept of the youth camps for long reasons. And they roll out a program in the mid-80s called Win Harder Minds. And it was called Infiltration and Hijacking System. But that program was a program of depoliticization of the youth. And that is why they call the youth marginalized group of young people. And they roll out programs like Eagle Club, if you remember, in the townships and all of that, which were basically blocking the process of development of the youth. And in this instance, it's not the same, but it is to roll out a concept of recreation that is about the future. And that is about saying that, what is my responsibility to the country as an individual in the context of the rights and the constitution and everything? Because it's good to talk about rights, but if we don't understand that rights come with responsibility, then we are in vain and we are in limbo. And the kind of nation we are building for tomorrow is the one that does not understand where we are going as a nation. What is it of importance about this flag? And what is patriotism? It's elusive. It is something that we can relate to. And so to be practical, through this particular recreation concept, these are some of the things that we are conceptualizing, and that we want them to engulf the nation and the youth in particular, both in and out of school, because with regard to the youth development program in South Africa, you deal largely with the program of disengaging, and which 30% of that disengaged youth, it is the girl child. Who some of them, if you talk about breaking the cycle of poverty, critical investment in that is going to assist us going into the future, because most of them are dropouts, not out of school only, but in terms of social development. And they are only exposed to early teenage pregnancy and all of those things. But nurturing and through the program of recreation, building the foundations of ensuring that the outlook of the society that we live in and the world they are getting exposed to, we think that will go a long way, because we know investment in young women and women in particular speaks directly to breaking the cycle of underdevelopment and poverty. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. Before I allow members to interact with the presentation, I should maybe from where I'm seated as the chairperson that the presentation that it has been presented for us here, it gives hope if we assess and say where are the weaknesses, how do we deal with the weaknesses. I'm concerned to the issue of your local club, which has been a burning issue for this community. Are we getting ready for the money? This is our concern. The issue of mass participation, that from our previous budget, you know, a lot of money was put into mass participation. But as we are representing provinces, we find that, you know, this will be your event oriented. You know, people will be gathered on one day, participate, and thereafter there's nothing happened. Also, the issue of the conditional grant, which also I think DC has touched on, which has also been one of our concerns as well to the community. The issue of the facility, Minister, really is a challenge. We are from provinces, we see exactly what is happening. We've got the challenge of youth which are doing nothing. They don't have, you know, that is actually the way in this challenge of drugs. You know, every weekend, youth are there, which is also a challenge. But I'm getting maybe from where I'm sitting that it's very important that we sit and say, this program we have, but did we really achieve what is that we need to improve? I'm really getting from where I'm sitting that most of our concerns that we have been raising as just in a committee, which is children we are getting somewhere. I'm going to allow members to interact with questions as I've indicated that members represent, we are from provinces. So members represent provinces. I'll start from Honorable Kalisho, Honorable Dini, Honorable Mashongi, Borota, Honorable Divida, in that quest. Minister, you are talking about investing in women and your team as I see is not representing or is not really talking to what you are saying, because this team is full of men and only one woman. As a result, I'm worried that in a meeting situation, that her voice, do you hear her voice when she is speaking or saying anything, that her contribution gets into your minutes, because I think she's the only one in the team. I'm not sure what is going on, not yet. Your whole team, how is it structured in the department? And also today, that was just a comment. I don't have questions, mostly, I just have comments. Today in the morning, there is a show or a program in Somowenene called the BCE Breakfast Aeon Explain. The question there was specifically to the province of the Eastern Cape, as I'm representing the Eastern Cape. We've got people in the Eastern Cape that have got talent. They were talking about artists and also spot people that are being known in the Eastern Cape or doing some sport activities, but at the end of the day, you don't know where are those people. You lose track of them as the problem. I think we need also to have guidelines or a policy or whatever that is going to guide us on how to elect maybe or to work with those people that are legends of the province or those that are sport people in the province. I've also have a concern on the indoor sport centers that we have. We've got a huge one in Whitney. When you go to Panamushle from town, it's on your left hand side. It's a very big complex, but it's underutilized. And of which that area alone, you may talk about the Nelson Mandela area. There are people there who can actually develop sports. It's an area of artists, an area of sports people, but the sports facilities that are there are underutilized. I'm not sure what is happening in those. I don't know if we don't have local committee that looks after the facilities, and also that have got programs for those people. I think they also need to focus on them also. In the youth, so the South African Youth Olympics, I see that said there will be a Youth Olympics in December 2012 in Gauteng. That also concerns me because I just wanted you to Gauteng is a well developed place. And these youth that needs to be developed mostly, they go out of other provinces to Gauteng to look for a development, which I think this program, it needs to be rolled out to other provinces also, and not only be held in Gauteng. In the following year, it can be in another province. We've got places in Eastern Cape, we can go to university. The member is asking where. The member from Gauteng is asking where can it be held in other provinces. I think that's the only questions and comments that I have.
You are saying you are avoiding the compulsory issue on the school squad, and I think during the advent of freedom, that's when the love or the volunteering from staff died in terms of training learners going to the ground. So if you don't have the compulsory policy, you will not be touching those that are supposed to be touched, because learners there from the poor or from rural and townships, that's where we find that a boy or a girl does not perform well in terms of food, but put that boy to soccer or that year to netball or whatever, that's when there is an excellent. But then because there's no enforcement of participation in the squad, they're not going to do it then. The other one is on the we have a lot of acronyms. We are not so well versed with others, like the BE. She said something. No, I know BEE, maybe sure. Imagine. She was talking about BEE in the Eastern Cape with a set of different meaning. And you'll find the STRAR will support BEE in Florida through purchasing of gym equipment for the fire. Why do you want to outsource this? because by outsourcing, that person or that VA will be costing, but instead of multiplying our resources to a school or a district, they just buy instead of giving a tender from these VAs and VAs. In your both documents, you talk of the sport facilities in the rural area. I think I saw more than three talk about the rural area. And I'm coming from housing in the township of Born in Jablan. They used to be in front of our home. They used to be Jablan grounds. Grounds, you know, more than five. And Saturday, Sunday, there will be lots of activities. But then that is no longer there. Most of it now, what is recent now, is the question of when municipalities see a space they put in a house, there's no longer an integrated planning in terms of this is where we're going to be, and then this area you must be home for the house. So the question of your department interacting with the senior government is also important. So we need to go back to township. To say it's not only learners from the townships or communities or from the rural areas, also the communities from the townships. Because if we lose this, it means we always go back to something and go into and say it takes from us, whereas not all of us were that are going to do. The majority of housing people are staying from the township. The next one is on I'm a former teacher. There is this thing of baptizing the nuns when they mass participation competing for a league. Baptizing in this sense, Biggie is 10 years, is perfect for me. But because of my physique, I'm a slender and short. Then I'm a good player, good netball player, or good soccer, whatever it is. Then the teacher will baptize you by giving you a new name and surname, taking the best certificate of the other boy or the other girl, giving it to you, you're not baptized. So others have been picked up at PSL level. Say, hey, this one is not 25, but it's 27, then 8. There is that thing that happens, which you must have the wisdom in terms of catching it. Payment. Okay. There is also what used to be in schools with the league. The schools forced to pay for participation. In other schools, if you say you go for rugby, not even rugby, so soccer, or athletics, let me say athletics, the utensils you don't have. And then they will then charge, come up with 200 grand or 150 or whatever it is, and then at the end it goes back to the access or redress in the passing time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, just also my
it's on.
Going to announce a new
advisory committee on suggesting when the department meeting with the PCA for inspection in March. What is the nature of the commitment? Thank you. Honorable Senator.
Thank you.
Honorable Senator.
Thank you. In terms of the problems that each country has in the past, and it shows that we are going somewhere. Thank you for the presentation. I'm just going to go to our manifesting against food sports. I'm aware that there is a memorandum of understanding that was found in the Department of Education, which is a good thing. That has happened, but I'm just worried. The first point that I would raise would be, it's known to all of us that in the Department of Basic Education, we haven't had new black teachers. Let me put it that way. Remember, when the colleges were closed long ago, you go to this school, just something that might have been important to some of us. In practical is, you go to all the schools, you find that the whole school has got the teachers about 40 people this day. There are no more new teachers coming into the school, and I'm just wondering if they will be able to be capacitated, as you say, they will be capacitated and so on. Because from the experience, especially in the rural areas, they don't have interest in sports. Yes, we are trying to bring it back because they have the interest, but it's not going to be easy to teach, to try and capacitate those educators to be able to perform in a practical situation in schools. I don't know what they are going to do, because in schools that have got richer parents, they always go and get somebody to come and do sports and play and so on. I wonder if that has been looked at as one of the problems that we might be facing going to the school. We saw that even with life orientation, when they have to do physical education, you find that they're just running around outside the classroom. My second one would be the balance between work that is teaching and learning and physical activity. I'm saying this because whenever there are criticisms about the poor performance of learning, you'll find that it is said it's because of the not enough time that is given to learning and teaching. Are we going to be able to balance it? Is time not going to be a factor again? Or is there a trend in place? As one or a colleague was saying here, that you don't want to make it compulsory. But if we don't make it a compulsory thing, I foresee a situation where a certain school will say, we are more into looking at our learning and teaching, and the poor kids are left behind and they don't go with the rest. So in the memorandum of understanding, has that been looked into? I think I'll confine myself to school, because that's where the young people, that's where my interest is in. You're talking here about the top school week. It's a good thing. It used to happen during our times. I don't know what happened. Good things are no longer happening. Where we have intra-schools and inter-schools going to those levels that have been mentioned in here. But my question is, will we have maybe a specific, like if we have inter-schools to see before we go to the district level, will we have vacancies for a person who will oversee the school? Because most of the time, if you leave these things to the schools themselves, they don't do what is expected. But if there is somebody who is oversee, like in a particular subject, this specific person, a vacancy is open for this specific person to make sure that this process of top school league goes smoothly and be able to even communicate with, because you are saying that this learner will be spotted during that period so that they can participate. the Youth Olympics that is, and also one program that is good. Will those youth, those people, that those that Youth Olympics, will these people, professional talent scouts, sports, who is going to coordinate them to make sure that they even reach my village, which is very, it's a very rural area, you know. I'm not sure. Then let me just cut it short there and say, I think the infrastructure thing has been really emphasized. I'm not going to go into that. Do we still have the quota system working in all the sporting codes in our country? And if not, what are we replacing with? Because it seems only certain sporting codes where you find that the quota system is adhered to, but others, I'm not sure. You find that the particular, yeah, I understand why. Thank you, Chair, for that. You will care.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. You know, in my time, it was actually a status symbol if you as a teacher reached the situation where you, the chairperson of my area, Central Karoo, chairperson, unit. Now, that situation is actually now absent. Because in that time, you as a teacher, you do have that acceptance amongst your own teachers there in your town and also in your region. If you arrive at any school and the principal is saying to the teachers, this man or this woman here is actually the chairperson of the region. And that situation we must try to get into again, so that the acceptance of the teacher must come back into school and in the region and also in the province. Now, I'm not usually a negative person, but today, this morning, I'm a little bit negative, and you must excuse me when I will say this. Now, I know and I understand that the Department of Sports and Recreation, they put their plan, the strategic plan around school sports and mass participation. But the reason why I'm negative is so less mentioning is made in the development of recreation. And that is the reason why I'm a little bit negative. They're only concentrating on mass participation sport, but the situation where the learners and also people must actually make use of the facilities, those facilities is not available in connection with the sport. And then the other thing, Honorable Chairperson, the time frame for us to listen to the presentation is, in my sense, very, very, very. And I understand what is the situation around us. But we must try in the future that we must add and use the time allocated to us as a select committee to come and brief us. If it's 10 o'clock, then it's 10 o'clock, not quarter to 11 or quarter past 11. And that is the second reason why I am actually very much disappointed. But let me just go to my question. The Free State and Gauteng did not sign. Now I want to find out what was the reason for their problem not to sign. Because the people in those two provinces in connection with the sport is very much in a awkward situation. Now my question also arises that, were they actually delivered with the allocation of this quarter and also with the other quarter? Will they be able to deliver? I know and I hear what the department was saying, that you will assist them. Now, I just want to find out what is that, what is the reason, and so that we must make sure that it doesn't happen again. all the provinces must get their money, their allocation, so that they can work and deliver for the Department of Sports and Education in the different provinces. That we must ensure. Then the coaching of the teachers. Now I want to find out in which provinces will those teachers be identified to go into that situation where they are actually becoming a coach for a certain sport code. Now which for which sport and what is the financial support to them so that we can capacitate those teachers to assist not only at their school but also in their region, maybe help the Department of Sport and Recreation to train more teachers to become coaches in the different schools. Because the development and the success of development actually lies in the school and not outside the school. There we must concentrate and there we must begin and start the recreation. And during what time of the year will we take those teachers out of the school? Because it's very much important. At certain times in the year, it is very important that the teachers must be there. And at other times during the year, we can take one or two of those teachers out of the school to send them somewhere for training, or to be trained at the coach. And then the school sports Olympics, that is a very good plan. But the good plan world can only be assisted if we have a plan how we will assist, number one, the learner who will be included in that sport Olympics, and also the teacher, because in most of our areas, the vast area of our provinces do have deep rural areas, and parents and learners, they would not have the finance to go on to that place. And usually, due to my experience, those learners must go to people in the area to ask them for money, for donations. And not in all the time they do get the money they needed. And that is the reason why I'm asking what support will they get from government or from the sports and recreation to make it for them available to participate on that level. And then if we succeed in that, then our senior sports will become better and better and better because we start on the lower level. And then the situation of DBT and sport and recreation South Africa, the mandate. Now, due to my understanding, there's a split mandate. DBE, they are responsible for something in connection with sport, and then sports and recreation are also responsible. Now, and I do understand that there's a memorandum of understanding between the different departments, but I actually want to see that there must be one focus from one side to develop sports and recreation in schools. What may be the oversight and the support of one or the other department. Maybe that is too much to ask, but you must just explain me so that I can understand the situation better. Because my understanding is actually that is the problem, because there's two departments focusing on one situation better. And then the budget cut, that is my last question. The budget cut. And I do understand also the situation in the budget. But, you know, if we cut each and every year or every second year or every 5 years for the recreation, my understanding then is that certain people don't understand the benefit which this department can deliver into our community. Everything, especially the development of our learners and the youth, lies inside this department, sporting creation, and the other one is art department. But you don't get the funds to develop that situation. Now, Again, here's a budget cut, further savings in cabinet, a sort of budget cut. 20 million were made over the MC, 5.8 million in 2012-13, 5.8 million in 2013-14. Now, my question to the department is, what motivation did you come forward from your side to treasury so that they won't be so much budget cut in the department? They must understand that your position and your mandate is very important if we want to improve our community, especially for the youth. If we succeed with the youth, then we will succeed further up in the
thank you, honorable members. I'm going to request that you go straight to the question. Because you are taking lots of time, you know, it's explaining, and after that, it's only then you go to the question. Can you try to go straight?
Thank you, ma'am. I appreciate it that you can do this quickly and get over with it. School sports, I'd like to know, does the department want to take over the function of school sports? Explain as that. Well, I mean, you can explain to me, as it seems that the department is getting very much involved into school sports. I want to know, is it becoming a function of you, or is it going to stay with basic education, etc.? So that's the one thing I would like to know. Funding of federations, I'm going to increase transformation in sports. I want to know what the stance is on that at this stage. I know, Minister, when I was at the sports in Java, we had a clear vision on where we're going. I think SA Rugby has given us a good line where we're going to, and I think they're doing very well as we get a hell of a lot of our new young black players coming through the system which was created by the Federation. Tourist destination, I'm not going to go into that. School drugs at school sports. I was president of Bicolans, the Cycling Federation, from 2000 when Andre Mastroff was with rugby, and I can tell you, drugs in school sports is very, very real. My son is in grade 10 in one of the best rugby schools in the Northern Cape. His friends are using steroids. Where they get it, I don't know. But I'm sure that these types of things must be looked at. And I feel that as I was then president of people and recycling, we as an association had to use the money we had on our own. I think the department should spend more money on getting to the bottom of this and getting this evil thing out of the equation. Sport coordinators is not paid well. I would like to know, you are decreasing the amount of sports coordinators. I understand that you give them a better salary, but on what qualifications are these coordinators going to have? Because obviously if we have coordinators, we must have professional sports coordinators and specialized sports trainers. I mean, if we were going to specialize in getting kids into sports so that they can do it in a profession, we have to have professional coaching. And then, guys, I would just like to say that the thanks for the 1%. I suppose 1% is better than nothing. You yourself have 3 million, is not a lot of money in sports. And then, lastly, I've got a problem in the Northern Cape. And perhaps while the minister is here, he will be able to help us. We've got a black kid that is a kickboxer. He got the recognition from Tuscop, he's got the colors. But going over is a problem. Now, this guy's name is, I think you have made the promise that the Northern Cape Sports is going to pay for it. I just want to get the guy's name in. Moses also said something, I'm just going to say, we need this young kickboxer. This guy's got so much potential. He's representing South Africa overseas. Now, I know there's a lot of these kickboxing associations, but I mean, if he's registered and he's Tuscop, gave him Springbok or SA colors, and he's representing the country, surely there must be a system to help this disadvantaged kid to be able to get overseas in the Northern Cape. And you know, he's running around trying to create funds from mail or funds, etc. And I don't think that it should be that poor kids
I mean, he's also working as, he's just over 18 years old, so he's working at the IET offices temporarily as well. But surely, we should help these type of guys to become something. If they don't have the opportunity, how will they ever get there? Thank you. That is it.
Thank you. Another question. Yeah, look, the disadvantage of the last thing that is to go straight to question. But chair, through you, I think I must also appreciate the minister and the department to the engineering schools of and the introduction of the schools. That's a very good move. And we also check through you to appreciate in the manner in which high observation the minister dealt with the issue on people's computers all the time, cricket from Africa. Very encouraging to see people taking up traditional points and displaying social function. My question goes to one chair, the reinventing of 15% of league toward buildings for facility in rural areas. It's a good thing. But my question is, what measures do you as department put in place to ensure that a strict adherence to this percentage by municipality? Because you find out year in, year out, in their mid fund, because 15% is referred towards facility, they just use units as they wish. So what is it that will make sure that people will to hold them accountable to or to adhere to this 15%? And in terms of the legislative mandate, as indicated in the Sports Act, I just want to find out, because I am always meeting up this boxing association, the boxing at the sport. What is it that boxing association is doing? Because, Chair, through you, we're missing the same day of Asama Isela, Jingang Chogela, the Rose of Soul. People were talking in townships everywhere about boxing. Very good and all those stuff. But nowadays, there's an absolute lull in terms of the people getting involved and participating in boxing as a sport. What is the problem? Are they actually adhering to their mandate? Because their mandate is to develop boxing in South Africa. What are they doing? Because for sure, I am sure it's not only me who's missing that, that spirit of people talking about a good boxer in South Africa. I would end there, Chair.
what we were, and I think the other key thing was the fact
that the country itself did not have a uniform classroom. Even now, the current federation is different styles and different approaches. Some have unions, and only unions are affiliated to federations, and clubs are affiliated to unions. Others have direct affiliation type of setup and scenario. So on. So we in rethinking this thing and reengineering this, we have looked at different class systems across the world. We have received ourselves internally and debated the matter. We have formulated the first discussion document on the new class system in the country, and that is why we have said that we are hopeful to start piloting the class system with perhaps one or two federations in the second half of this year. So by year two, year three, in terms of the sports plan, we should have instituted a class system, a new class system for the country that yields results. One of the things we have also done, because the support we may want to give to Makurun FC vis-a-vis Orlando Pirates, mm-hmm. not the case, and we, or the Wanderer Club for that matter, can be the case. And so we have to classify clubs and put them in different tiers and know that a club in a tier one, what are the type of needs and what type of support at that level we need to provide. And so I think this is what we, where we are going, and we, I'm convinced that, and I'm going to answer another question linked to this one, which is that why are we outsourcing the issue of provision of equipment? It is precisely because we will not be in a position. We are of the view that the funds to be administered for school sports purposes must be put centrally. As government, as a department, we are unable to keep legally so funds from the national territory, because the act prohibits the municipality, provincial government, or national government receiving funds from the law. And that will constitute a huge chunk towards financing the school sports. So we have decided to take a portion of our, like I say, good cash and good money, because we have been engaging with many companies on the top 100 listed companies on the stock exchange. And they have been making commitments to our company. They have shown greater confidence in the sports cars, because the sports cars was started by business. We have decided to put our own portion of the little resources we have into that bigger pool. But our agreement with the sports cars is that we jointly agree on how the funds get to this car. So it is not necessarily a free for all. And the sports cars then is appointed as an agency to receive funding and distribute the benefits for school. The other key thing is that we have, as part of support to clubs, in the past through the conditional grant, we clubs have been complaining that they are not getting good quality equipment. And as a consequence of this, they insisted that they are given a ball, and then yes, indeed, provinces are able to prove that they have provided a ball to a specific club, because those clubs must find that they have received the equipment and give their statistics. And provinces quarterly account to us on the basis of that statistics. But when we did our own monitoring visits to the clubs, now directly, straight to the clubs and talking to the clubs, the common threat and theme that was emerging across the country was that clubs were not agreeing that they are not getting the equipment. They were agreeing that they are getting the equipment, but the equipment is of inferior quality. That they kick the ball for 3 weeks and after then the ball is gone. And then they have to wait for 6 months to get more equipment. So we decided as part of the new framework to publish a national centralized transversal tender through the national treasury, where all provinces will have to procure from one centralized database and one centralized, and the prices are predetermined. We look at what it costs for you to buy a ball, chair in game or anywhere else, a good quality football, and you compare with what the provinces are currently paying to get those ones. Sometimes in other provinces it has been as shocking as 3 times the other. And you also realize that we are a very poor company. We don't have much resources to stress them to other clients. So we wanted to ensure that we bring uniform prices, and we can benefit through the assistance of national treasury from economies of scale and bring come and practice group suppliers and agree on how much province it needs to spend so we get greater gain for money. So I'm reaching this for the question of why the two provinces did not want to sign. One of the major reasons why they did not want to sign was precisely because of that fact that we would have taken away the procurement market away from the province on a national So they expressed wrath and happiness with that. But we were adamant that we have to make the look of it. And there has to be quality equipment being given to last and to the system. Otherwise, it delivers a mockery of the whole system itself. So, but I want to place it on record that I expect. They have now all of them signed. And I've already indicated that we have already put contingency measures. We were the first ones to be caught down, and we did not meet the target in terms of the economic challenge. I've indicated that we will be deploying people, particularly to the region, to support the Free State in terms of ensuring that it's housing has demonstrated ability and capacity to deal with this pandemic. In fact, even in the previous cycle, it has been seen in the bulk of the time. So, the Free State, we will support by deploying people to help the province to be able to stand them. I think this is the most important thing. The other issue that was raised was the issue around the facilities. That's a big challenge. We acknowledge this, and I think that is why when we were presenting, we presented that we are doing a facility study. We are busy with it right now as we speak. There's a lot of work that has gone into this. We met with municipalities last week, and in that, the municipalities will now be participating in terms of this. We're also looking at the issue of special training with them. We've taken key resolutions about them zoning for regional forecasts and so on. And I want to confirm that we are engaging with the Department of COCTA as well as Human Settlement, particularly around the issue of making sure that the Township Development Board do not approve new establishment unless there has been zoning for sport facilities and for public open space. And that has been also a resolution of this conference and which we will be taking forward in the future. The issue of women representation in the department, I think what you see here is a cross representation presentation of who we are. We are actually a much more female dominated department. And even cabinet recognizes that. In terms of SMS level, we've got 14 males and 11 females, directors upwards. Ms. Khan is the chief operations officer here, the second to the DG, the DGG of the department. So what you see is a growth misrepresentation. Some of our delegations have struggled with the portfolio committee to the monitoring business for provinces. So, and even in totality, you see that in terms of the entire department, females are 96 and males are only 78. So we are actually doing extremely well in terms of women representation in the department. The other issue that was raised was the underutilization of sports facilities. This is a challenge, and I think that's why the issue around knowing what we have, because our country doesn't know how many sport fields and sport things are there. And that's why we are doing the first audit ever to determine all of these things, to also know the space in which they are. And this will help us determine the national long-term standards. For instance, where there are provincial sport prisons, the key issue that we must answer is how many municipal prisons within what radius, and considering the population dynamics and also the spatial planning dynamics, should we have to support the provincial sports treatment. Those norms currently are virtually non-existent. Municipalities in developing their IDPs do not take any norms and standards into consideration. Some municipalities have the norms and standards themselves, but this is not a uniform picture for the country. And there you have a big challenge of where to build a sports facility, even if the land has been zoned for a sports facility. The key question becomes, in this specific one, what facility is it? Is it a swimming pool? Or is it a baseball hammer, or is it a tennis court? So those traffic, how they are made, and how what determines they are, or what informs that those types of determination, is a key issue that the national long-term standards will need to address. And of course, some of the facilities that were rolled out as part of the World Cup legacy of cricket, the overseas of it, and so on. The minister made this point a lot of time that today we are Islamists, they are not taken care of. One of the key issues we believe we can address with the MIG grant, if it is centralized, is the whole question of the maintenance care. Because delivering a facility is somewhat easy, getting it there. But keeping it going and maintaining it is one of the biggest challenges facing the smaller municipalities. And in fact, it often is not you are setting up municipalities for failure by simply giving them a bigger facility that they can maintain when they are struggling to pay systems to their money. So I think these are the considerations that we are making in agreeing that the 15% of the MRG must be not only reinforced, must now be centralized by Treasury. And the calculations by National Treasury indicated that this currently in all municipalities constitutes just below 2 billion rand. And we believe that with 2 billion rand for sports facilities, we can prioritize even for municipalities now with their own 15%, they would never be able to have this. Of course, with our key narrow focus of focusing on the regional sports hubs as the key part for a lot of the facilities in all the regions of that. The issue of the venue for the Youth Olympics is informed simply by the numbers that we are projecting and looking at. And unfortunately, the bigger universities with bigger residential facilities happen to be in health. So, which creates a huge quagmire for small universities like Waltersu, because then it may mean that the outflow we have to put in hotels and all that, which we will not have the type of resources. And that is why even in the original case, we were looking at the army, because the facilities would have come for free. So, with universities, we still pay, but the amounts are quite reasonable, like about 100 pounds per day, per night. So that's what is reasonable and affordable, and I think we are just being guided largely by the numbers as they are. The issue of avoiding compulsory schools, we are not avoiding at all. In fact, we are lamenting that it is not compulsory. If we had our way, and this, I've raised this in the context of saying that one of the things that the current policy does not have, which we as sport and recreation would have preferred, was that it becomes compulsory. Right now it is not. And that's something we think that over the time, we will first have to amend the school sport, the South African School Act before the policy can, because the policy can override the law. Mm-hmm. So we'll have to look at that, and also the children's act, particularly around the issues pertaining to parental consent. So if without amending those two laws, we will not be able to achieve compulsory sport, including the issue of physical education. The minister has also declared this issue that teachers in life orientation, they are disadvantaged. One of the resolutions of the sporting law was that there has to be a separation between physical education and life orientation. Because right now, while physical education, by policy, the minister has said that 20% of the time must be physical education in life orientation. The honorable member makes a point that observation that where children are allowed, where are allowed. Where in other schools, where a teacher doesn't really like that they have a dusty or a bad soccer pitch or what, he will not go there with his college shoes and his tie. He says to the children, he do ask that or something, and then he's sitting in the classroom. And in winter, same thing also happens. They don't want to go into the third. And so as long as physical education does not become a standalone, we'll always have this contestation about the choice of the teachers are making in whether children will play sport or will not play sport or will be physically active or not. And I think it's an issue that we have engaged with music education. Obviously, they are decrying the issue of the salary bill by recruiting new teachers in physical education and so on. It's something we have to look at progressively over time. But with the type of teachers that are there now, who are committed, those teachers must be allowed to
do what they can do, and we have to support them. The key question was, what support are we giving them, and when will these teachers come from all properly? In fact, the conditional grant framework will distribute it to members to look at. Under school sport, one of the conditions we have done is to provide 20% of their budget in school sport, which in province is going to be 50% of the grant. That 20% of that budget we give in each province, they have to spend 20% of the school sport budget on supporting and increasing teachers in terms of training, operations, and the that and the first call coaching framework. So this will distribute for members to see. The other thing that was raised was the issue of facilities, that it is not only rural areas that we target, but townships, and also the fact that now in the zoning, they just build houses and no longer this. We were aware about this and we have raised this with women's settlement. The new norms and standards that women's settlement is adopted will include the floor that I think that the township spot must not approve any settlement or new development without facilities being zoned. And I think this is a challenge. It's not their responsibility to put up the facility, but the zoning must have that point. And when the thing is built, depending on the nature of the size of the township, that must also respond to the size of the land must be in its own. Because in other communities, there is only one field or two fields, but then there is phase one. By the time they do phase two and phase three, that facility has become too small than the people staying there. And in phase two and phase three, no zoning happens. So it is an issue that we need that. The issue of HC, in the same manner we are committed to dealing with the broken chip, the HC will have to be covered. But there are new things that are missing in our field. Right now, the Department of Home Affairs is piloting that market, which means that children, by the time they are born, already they are being assigned ID numbers. And those ID numbers can be substituted to any system and district. In fact, our basis of tracking development in all athletes is right now, whether in schools or in clubs or anywhere else, we rely on the basis of a certain ID. We have felt around with issues of new technologies, biometrics, and fingerprints and what and so on. But the systems are just different. So we just have to follow the person's ID. Now the only challenge with that system is that the current witness and the loophole, and she was not cut covered, is that somebody may call themselves and you must give their ID. And we have no way of telling at that stage that it is this person or not, because we are dealing with children who don't have, who by law are not required to be giving ID, but so it is therefore important that as time progresses, when the smart card, when the child gets born and the family, the smart card is issued to the I'm sure that will solve most of our problems going forward. But we'll have cheating problems in the first years of operation in this regard. The issue of getting children who can afford to pay for them to participate or to pay for sports leagues and so on. In private schools and state area schools and former models, this is compulsory. that we will not tamper with. Even now, the independent schools, we have decided not to tamper with it as well. We have allowed that our league system must run and run beyond doubt. And when we are convinced that it is working well, perhaps by year 3 or year 4, we will then invite the Independent Schools Association to collapse their new people. The bigger product can be. But we are not eager to temper and kill what the only thing that works well right now. So we have left it at that in this regard. But those people pay. So those in those categories are paying. You pay the fee for the sport lady and what, and you also pay for the fees. These are for parents who can afford. But for parents who can afford, in schools in Kuntal, what? 1 to 3. Those who are paid and are not supposed to pay and are directed to all provinces, but they need to spoken to all children who want to participate. And that is why, as a state, we are putting a lot of money to finance the media outside so that becomes easy. after what are we going to provide these children with? Obviously, there is money for transport set aside, there's money for participation in tournaments and so on, in the conditional grant framework that we have already provided the program. So this is a knockout week by school. So it is a knockout because we can't play around with it. You can imagine it will take us 4 years to complete 1 week with 27,000 schools. So it's a knockout. So schools play against each other and they knock out and they rise. And the school that wins the victory goes on to play programs, and programs goes on to play national in the school sports Olympics. So this process of progressive increment means that when we start, the base is too much for participation, but this is like a local procedure. And later, by district, there will be fewer schools, and therefore provinces are focusing on just the fewer schools remaining in the system. We play the provincial, and those who win provincial go on to compete nationally. So it's a tyranny, but the schools that get knocked out of the league, say some now are playing the district, if they get knocked out now, and some in the three stage is almost going to provincials now. So those that get knocked out at this stage, anyway, the school doesn't seem to stop, because in selecting school teams, when your sister chair that, there has to be an intra-school competition where there are four teams of soccer or whatever, they compete against each other. And even the schools that lost out, they can continue playing friendlies with nearby schools on a continuous basis to make sure that the athletes are selected. And the issue of the advisory committee, the minister has announced this in the, when he was delivering the budget speech in the National Assembly. And the data advisory committee, we're planning currently now for its first meeting. And we have prepared a discussion document consistent with the sports plan and the regulations of the UNDA. Soon the minister will chair the first meeting and then we will take it from there in terms of the work that this committee must do. However, we have not stopped in terms of our recreation efforts. Like I have indicated when we were presenting that we have looked at various models that work well in terms of education. And we have said that at the start, in year one, we will start very strongly. For the first time, we have provided a dedicated budget for us to do observe international days, observe important days, work closely and for closer relations with Department of like Health and work with international organizations in this regard. There is we are working with KFW and with GIZ from Germany on important programs of this nature and engagement in educational activities for non-competitive purposes. And we have also said that our key focus will be around integrating open gym for education purposes in communities and ensuring that they are part of the zone. Together with the kids' facilities considered as education. And this we are rolling out. We will still have new ideas and new things and new everything, and the value that this advisor committee will have to us in this area. The issue of promoting access to facilities, I must ask them to indicate that we have divided schools or classified schools for the school sports system into three categories. We have what we call a generalist school, which is a school that plays any of the codes that it chooses to play, that the governing body decides and plays rugby or football or whatever, or whatever. Those schools play and they can compete against them. Then we also designate 53 schools as a regional support school. These schools support, these schools are blessed largely with the facilities. They have a rich tradition of playing sports and so on. These schools support the nearby schools. In our engagement with the TBE, the key issue has always been that when these schools open up their facilities to share with children from fewer neighboring schools, how do we ensure and who takes the responsibility for the maintenance of their facilities? Because the increase in the fees will put a lot of pressure on those facilities, and we don't want critical relationships. We ourselves at Sporting Recreation have agreed with TBE that they do not have money. We will therefore contact all the 53 schools ourselves. And we will pay those 53 schools to sustain their maintenance budget, to make sure that they open up their facilities to poor neighboring schools. Then on the top tier, we have the code-specific or so-called specialized schools. These schools single-coded, largely single-coded school, which, if it's a tennis school, it focuses purely on tennis. And it attracts the best teachers and coaches in tennis. And the schools are also supported by us and accredited by federations in different sites. As the school sports league is being played at high school, the single-coded schools are only at high school, at primary, they are generally school. Because we don't want children that early to start specializing, they have to, there are scientific advisors and they must play generally. And you start focusing when you get to high school. Some of the schools are already known. For instance, in rugby, the 27 schools traditionally produce about 90% of all springboks. They already know. Even in cricket, they do that. In the Kamajola, we do see those schools. And the bulk of the proteas come from the school. We are spreading all this to the 16 other federations and making sure that all the we've got specialization schools. And we finance bulk of the specialization schools. Right now, federations are nominating the schools for accreditation. And we will be taking this. We have already finalized the first draft framework for the Ministerial Sport Bazaar. In January next year, 2013, the minister will launch the Ministerial Bazaar. The federations and the talent scouts will be out at the School Sports Olympics in December this year, identifying the most talented children in the 16 course. And these children will then be given the Ministerial Sport Bazaar to study at this selection school. This program now replaces our old scientific support program, where in the past we used to spend at the Stellenbosch and High Performance Center in Bristol, Pretoria and so on average about 80,000 to 90,000 per year. With the new system, we will spend on average about 30,000 per learner, but we will reach much more learners and we will have a much more efficient system of reaching children who are talented and providing them with great support. The issue around balancing time in club versus in sport, the Magnificent Wednesdays are only supposed to be played after school. Every Wednesday after school. And that's when we require sports to be played. And also for the league, particularly the district and so on, to be played in the league. So we do not seek to interfere with this, and that is why we are also focusing on the school sports Olympics in the December holiday. So these children will play in the first week or so and be home just after the exam and be home ready for Christmas, 1 week full Olympic. And that's what we are looking at. And so we don't intend to tamper with the schooling system. The other issue is how do we ensure that the talent identification program works that already touched on this. We are working with federation. We are also accrediting and supporting the local sport council for the first time. We are providing at least 5 catalogs to support the establishment of the school code structure of the entire ground that we need to provide. We have to spend 5% of it in supporting the school specific code to do the work in that field. And so we are confident that the teacher, the national volunteer, and the code structures and the local councils will be sufficient with the federation out in full sport as a local or the school sport Olympics in identifying the necessary talent and in selecting the children for this type of support. We have people here, yes, we believe that some of the people who are now saying that the sports coordinators on substantive contracts must do the work of coordination of this various structures and overseeing the top school league in this regard. And the key issue there remains that the responsibility of teachers cannot be substituted. I think all other structures play the supporting role for the work that the teachers must provide. If the quota system still in place, yes, the INDA, the minister favors to do away with the quota system. It's a battle we lost at the INDA. I think on the last day of the INDA there was a 3-hour dedicated discussion after the quota system. And it became very heated and so on. Ultimately, ended into a resolution that says the reasons why the quota system was introduced in the first place, with all its weaknesses and everything, those reasons remain in place. talking about this problem. And then we should be addressing why is it not working. And our view was that if we address the issue of access, and the netball lesson is important because then we will address the issue of merit naturally. And there will be no more need for us to talk quota. So consequently, the quota system is still in place. However, it is now reinforced and supported by which entities of the development work that we are doing. But on the other side, it's also supported by this panel of women and sisters on the transformation of sport and the transformation charter and the scorecard, which ultimately, for funding of federations, we are going to make it compulsory that each and every federation here should make a way to this scorecard, so that all of them enter into a voluntary mechanism for assessment. So international federations don't accuse us of making in the affairs of sport and of interfering. So I think that is the position with the quota system and our position on transformation. How do we bring prestige back to this and ensure that teachers look forward to being chairperson of the school structures and ensuring that it becomes prestigious for them to live? We believe that if we bring sufficient capacity, professionalism, as well as a well-organized school sports league system and culminating into the Olympic League, and we make it worthwhile for the winning school, and they get much more than what they had before, perhaps in support of the new sports field or support in terms of equipment and all that, and perhaps even try money for the school or even a computer center or something, it become much more prestigious for teachers to look into the idea of that. The secret lies with the successful implementation of the league system itself. And I think we are quite committed to making sure that we do that. We have already engaged with the unions, and even during the launch of the school sports league program, the unions were there, all of them spoke and said that they support this. And you have already seen many teachers coming forward for the purposes of registration and the purposes of funding. So we are quite eager to support. When will these teachers be taken out of school? Our projection is that the first batch of teachers must be trained now in the United to be ready for deployment in Qatar. So yes, indeed, we do not intend to interfere with the school. Some of the courses will be delivered over the weekend. Some will be provincial-based courses, some will be national. So all these cut teachers looking at this and the 16 federations are also working on the finalization of their training manual. The issue of last time, I won't go into it, I think the Chakasana project. And which province is that one I've also answered. And that I've answered as well. Okay. Why, what case and the case for sport and what reasons did we do to the federal to ensure that they will cut our budget? I'm sure honorable members will know that convincing people of the importance of sport is a problem. We have decided not to amend this anymore, but through our team to prove that there is an important case for sport, and indeed we are making that case for sport. Day in, day out, we are achieving greater confidence, not only of the public, but also of government itself about the right that we take. And hence, government's interest and commitment in approving the sports plan. And government interest in us with the treasury requesting the sports plan and making sure that ultimately, even with the setback of the car, we ultimately revise the baseline. Because that is why I indicated that in year one, we're looking at almost $1 billion to implement it. And we are hopeful that by the September time to do budget adjustment, we will be looking back to treasury to say it must readjust our baseline during the, and we hope that the NCOP ultimately will support the budget process and put what we are requiring that it be approved. And that you are also representative of provinces, and together with the portfolio committee representative of the people, it shouldn't just be us alone who speak about this. In the UK, the new the education minister there, because they are school sports is under education. The education minister had wanted to cut the budget on school sports, and the minister makes this example all the time. It wasn't the children and the sports people who fought, classmates, it was the parents themselves who stood up, because the reporter told on BBC and so on. The parents took up arms and said, no, you can't cut the budget for sport. What do you want us to do with the children when they come out of school? And to that extent, that conservative government ultimately agreed to leave the budget alone. In South Africa, we see daily protests on the street about civil leaders. We are yet to see one on where parents demand facilities or where parents demand school sports for their children or something like that. We are looking at which means that even government sometimes itself triggers a self-child within the government system. Because you recall the recent cabinet said why it is not approving the London for us to hold the Olympics in 2020. Yes, they said that they wanted to focus on service delivery, presupposing that what we are doing as a department was not going to be service delivery and it's not being performed with the council. I think there is a mindset we have to assist in shifting. And I think we can only do that if we do extremely well at what we do. People will believe in what we are doing, and we must not cease to make good things all the time for the importance of sport. The issue of do we want to take the function of school sport away from basic education? No, I don't think we need to. But basic education itself has openly declared that it doesn't have funds for this, and they have allowed us greater leverage to take the lead without necessarily removing the function. We are fighting for the budget, and we are fighting for this because we understand that the entire success of the entire system of our country depends on the success of the sport. And we therefore can't fight chess battles about who's in charge and who's not. We don't mind school sports remaining under them, but our view is that where we should best support them to be able to achieve this, and where we spend money in schools, we are willing to do that. And that is why I indicated that the 53 schools as well as the specialized schools will be our base. We will have to finance and pay for those things in the school system to make sure that we are. And looking in school years, we are quite committed, and that is why I've indicated that we are amending legislation to make it compulsory for the institute to be able to have children who are looking. The issue of the qualifications for sport coordinators, they have to have a sport science degree. This is important to have. It's a beginning. There are many graduates with sport science qualifications who are unemployed and who continue to be churned out by university. The pool is quite huge. We must never be able to run out of that personnel. I mean, where is the statistics are in the quarter. The support we must give to recognized athletes, particularly those recognized by FASCO. Yeah, I think the athletes are recognized by FASCO, consistent with our issue of demotation. FASCO runs what is called the OPEX program, the Operational Excellence Program. This must take care of highly talented athletes at a professional level. Development athletes are our issue, and we take care of them. But the professional athletes are the baby of us. So once a person turns professional and gets the recognition you speak about, becomes and represents our people, becomes the responsibility of us. So this is important because we too must not interfere in team selection and so on. And in saying so, I'll also partially answer the issue of the fact. SASCOC has a greater say over SAFA in asking them and making them account on the preparation. When our minister interrogates them, he interrogates them not on the point of view of what they must do, but in making them brief us and make us understand what are their plans and what they are in place. But we are able to say to them, do this or do that, because then that is considered by SAFA as interference in the day-to-day running of this. So, but however, SASCOC, that's a confederation. If they intend to present in South Africa, like now they are presenting it for preparation for AFCON and the World Cup, SASCOC has every right to question them and to even direct the present things like that. So there is that broad demarcation now. The other issue confounding this challenge, because I'm sure maybe members of this committee may be receiving a lot of letters from athletes of that nature, is that in certain federations, it's unlike football where you only have a team. and where all the FIFA sanctioned tournaments are indicated. In other sports like boxing, like what, you find that there are about six international federations. And you may find that FASCOC has only sanctioned two of those federations. And so an athlete who now wish to compete in an international tournament of the third federation, strictly speaking, that athlete we should not be sanctioned because we can't do everything. Our resources now don't allow. We have to choose carefully what we participate in and so on. And so those athletes who believe that they can. And so it's judo, karate, and so on, boxing, and so on. They've got that type of situation. And so I think we have to look at what are they accredited for. Because that same athlete, if he was competing in another federation, he may be supported. But if he's competing in another, he may well not be supported. The other issue was the MIG grant. We want this MIG grant to be centralized. We want it to be directed from Michigan. Okay. PSA, the last issue is on the heyday of boxing. We are doing a lot in respect of supporting boxing poverty. It hasn't been doing well, and as you may see, even if budget is dropping, it's not increasing. We have made this argument to Treasury that each year we have to save this money, and it's not happening. So part of the turnaround, the key elements of the turnaround strategy, one is around the issue of broadcasting rights, helping them secure the broadcasting rights with SABC and Supersport. The minister has been putting a lot of pressure on both Supersport and SABC to support boxing. I'm sure honorable members may have started to see that some boxing matches are now started on SABC. And this agreement will help them. If they sign that agreement, they will then be able to raise sufficient revenue to become the issue of the going concern will be away, and they'll have enough money to be able to carry out most of their mandate. So our process is underway, and we have now deployed a full-time person, a senior manager, to have this boxing for the next 3 months to help them turn around the situation.
Yeah, hello, I'm around.